I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
I told my uncle that, I have an uncle who lives in LA that is an actor, and I told him that when the baby goes to college or leaves the house, whatever, I don't care, when he's 18, I was like, listen, I'm going to come live with you in LA and be the oldest PA in town, but I'll be great.
Yeah. You could be a PA here.
It's like, cool. Yeah, totally. I probably should be. Yeah. I should probably learn how to do it before trying to go to some city where it's like the major industry.
Glamorous.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, they love babies in LA, from what I understand, too.
Love them. Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, he's very attractive, but I'm not going to go until older. I've got an 18-year table.
Yeah.
It's okay. I have an 18-year theory, which makes my, like, being a PA when I'm 54 totally okay.
Yeah.
I have this theory that every 18 years, you get to be a new and different person. That, like, from, so, like, 0 to 18, you're your parents' mm-hmm. kid. You, like, live wherever your parents decided. You grow up. You go to school, all that stuff. By the time you're 18, you're all like, ugh, I'm somebody else. I'm out of here. And either you're out of here, like, out of your parents' house, and you move to the apartment complex down the street, or you move to another city and you live a life, whatever. From 18 yeah. to 36, it's you as your first level of adulthood. You're figuring it out. You don't know what to do. You get a little bit older. You're like, I got this. I'm fine. You probably, you know, get married, buy a house potentially, do certain things that, like, you know, feels more like adult-like. You made that decision. Your parents didn't make it. It's yours now. But then when you're 36, and this is where I think a lot of people go through, like, midlife crises, you're not really sure what you're supposed to be anymore. You're like, okay, but I'm not in my 20s. I'm not, like, new and exciting. Like, there's nothing that I haven't really done in a, like, cross-off-the-list major, like, you're an adult now kind of situation.
Yeah.
So what do I do? And I think that's when a lot of people break up their marriages and, like, mm-hmm. buy sports cars and, like, switch careers that are super weird and get, like, depressed or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's totally cool for you to be different at 36. Of course you are. You've lived another 18 years. Would you be mad at 18-year-old self for being wanting to leave? And no, they had to go on, be somebody else. So this year I turned 40, right? So I'm 4 years into my next thing. And I was kind of like feeling weird, like, what am I doing? What's my next thing? That's why I kind of tried to learn screenwriting. And then when I had the baby, I was like, well, goodness, I guess mom is the thing that I'm going to be mm-hmm. for the next 18, right? Because, I mean, you know, that'll cut off, so it's 4 years, so it'll be about 16 or so.
So it's out of your hands again, so that's kind of
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, he's
you know?
An adult at that point.
You don't have to, like,
you know, once he's 16, he's making his own decisions. He's not asking me what to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then I'll get to be somebody else. And I'm sure that's a time in your 50s when you hit another weird wall of, like, what happens to me now?
Yeah.
Who am I? So I'm excited, and that's why I'm like, it's going to be great. We're going to have a good time.
See,
I'm not sure what's happening right now, but finger 50s.
Yeah.
Fun times.
No, they have to be, I think.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm 6 years away from that next, like, marker, and I've already got buyer's remorse on most of the decisions I've made up to this point. Like, the humility has already shown up in spades to the extent of, like, you know, it's, you know, that first 18 is, like, parents run it, and, you know, you're kind of defined by what they let you do, and then you take off, and you're like, now it's my turn, I'm doing it by me. And then you realize that wasn't necessarily, like, the best option available. I mean, it's the one you went with, and, you know, like, it felt good going that way. But then you're just like, well, you know, the first 18-year-old me didn't have as many, like, you know, bench warrants and, you know, like, tax audits.
I would venture to guess that in the next 6 years, you resolve those bench warrants and tax issues.
I'm pretty sure there's a statute of limitations on them that is
great.
Pretty much lines up exactly with that, so
great.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
I just mean, like, in the sense of, like, I totally agree with the whole transitioning, or, you know, making some big change, because 18 years yeah. Is a decent period of time to just get used to everything.
And I feel like whenever I talk about it, I feel like it should, like, make you feel better wherever you are in it. You know what I mean? Like, you're 30, right? You're 30, you get 6 more years, and the idea of 6 more years through a transition, through a, like, life path is like, Well, relax, because 6 years, a lot of stuff can happen in 6 years. You'd be a totally different person in two, never mind six, yeah. Right? So, I don't know. It eases my mind a little bit as opposed to, like, year by year feeling like I have to accomplish something. And instead, it's like I have a wider view of it, and then it's, like, not so, you know, overwhelming.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I heard one time on NPR. I want to make it known that I listen to NPR.
You're very smart.
On NPR one time I heard they said, they were talking sort of about like looking ahead and looking to the future, and they used the analogy of like a car driving at night and how you can only see as far ahead of you as your headlights will allow you to. So for me, I've always like thought of that when I'm, when I get asked like, what's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just like trying to like, I understand what you're saying about like, you know, what you just said basically. But for me, I'm just like trying to look right in front of me,
yeah.
And just
yeah,
like
yeah.
focus on it for now. But that was something that I, that always kind of popped into my head as.
Well, yeah, it's almost like, have you ever did, Michael Fulk used to do this meditation where like, he would, play some, you know, ethereal music, and then you close your eyes and he'd talk you through from where you are all the way to imagining being in the stars looking down at the earth, and there's you, and you're so, look how tiny you are, you're so tiny. And something about that made me feel better. There's something great about, yes, being in the moment, and I think that's probably why we do improv, is like mm-hmm. to live in this moment, and also the communities have this live in the moment vibe, which is great. But then when you're like overwhelmed with the moment, you can
yeah.
like get far away and be like, it's okay, I'm just a speck of dust.
That's something I'm getting better at just in life in general with like my work-life balance is not, I used to sweat the small stuff like a lot. And now I'm on something called like reishi mushroom powder and like all these like natural supplements. It's very
Ooh,
hippie of me.
Right.
I mean, it's very NPR of me. and it basically like just, I've started to learn living in the moment can make you stress out about the moment
yeah.
and not look at the bigger picture like you're saying. And I try to look at the bigger picture now and like calm down a little bit when I've got a lot going on in my everything.
Are you from Texas?
From Austin, born and raised.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Another unicorn. We don't have some.
That is, I was going to say, those yeah. those are always, I was just saying they're, I don't know. I work with a girl who is from here, and it's like, I would have guessed like here or Orlando, Florida, like when I met
oh,
her.
Oh no!
I don't know.
Wait,
how I feel
what
about
would,
Orlando,
what did
Florida.
You guys think about me?
No. To the extent of like, there's no accent, even though they live in the South.
Oh.
So you should okay.
Because
they live in a place
Orlando?
That everybody goes to, but
see,
you don't
okay.
expect anybody to be from.
Okay.
Like, or I mean, like in the sense of like. Not the kind of Floridian that you see in the newspaper headlines, but, like, just
Florida's
your average...
Florida's a big place, though.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just saying, there's, like, this group of people that just kind of are, like, Southerners, technically, but don't have an accent. They sound... They don't really sound Northern, either. They're very, like, in this... I don't know. They just say words. Like, words are said.
So, but you didn't peg me for Florida?
No. Well, you're blonde, so maybe, but...
What are blonde people?
I don't know. They've
from
always been
Florida?
Blonde.
I'm actually a quarter Colombian, if you can believe it or not. My grandma was born and raised in Colombia. Huh. I look nothing like her, but we are related.
No,
you know,
awesome.
That's a weird thing about like genetics. I have two cousins who are like more Irish than Irish, and they both have dark brown hair and like deep olive skin, and I'm like, what is up with you? This is ridiculous. And I know their parents, and both of their parents are similarly dark,
yeah.
but I know that they are Irish. I know it because I know
their
whole family. Yeah, man. They're actually love the beach, and so they spend a lot of time there.
But they love St. Patrick's Day.
Oh yeah, right.
It just happened.
Absolutely. And people were like, "You're not Irish. You don't get it." And they're like, "I'm the."
One of my scariest life moments. I don't think I learned a lesson from it. Whatever. I, like, lived in New York and for a little bit while I was in college doing internships in creative places, trying to, like, spread my wings, see what I liked to do. And it was St. Patrick's Day. And I lived on 8th Avenue, like basically at 8th Avenue and 29th, kind of in Chelsea, if you're familiar. Mm-hmm. And the parade goes down 8th Avenue on St. Patrick's Day. And I was like, it'll be fine. It was not fine. People were shit-faced. I mean, I was right across from all of the, like, Irish pubs. And I stupidly tried to order to-go food from one of them and tried to cross the street, and I made it. And went in there, and it's called Molly Wee's Pub, and people were just disgusting, like, getting thrown out, and I was like, maybe I'm not made for New York.
Wait,
well,
are
New
all
York,
the Irish pubs
St. Patrick's
in one
Day
place
is
in
insane.
New York?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like saying, it's like going to New Orleans in Mardi Gras and going, well, I guess New Orleans isn't for me. It's a very different place.
On steroids.
Yeah.
I also think New York, I always thought I would move back to New York, and I think I finally have kind of, a little bit, let that go. I don't think I'll move back to New York.
But here's the thing, you can in your 50s.
When I'm 50-something.
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
you can wait for that.
I was actually thinking that it would be a great place to be, like, old. Like 60s, 70s, 80s. Because you take the subway everywhere, I don't need a car.
Yeah.
If I get an apartment with a an elevator, well, I'm fine. What do I need? I can be in a tiny space. I mean, how expensive could it really be?
Very expensive.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I was gonna say it would be great if you made that plan way beforehand and you got old in like a rent controlled apartment. And you're like still paying $9 a month, like from.
Yeah, if only I were Monica.
Like you're in the Friends. Yeah.
My fear would be that if I wanted to move back to New York in my 50s, which I'm 16 years old, so let's see, that'd be like 40 years. if I wanted to move back in my 50s, I just feel like it might have fallen into the water. You know how they're, like, having,
of
these weather problems? Like, I feel like New York and, like, parts of California and then New Orleans might be screwed. So I'm kind of like, and I think New York is a place for young, single, hungry people. But I get what you're saying. And I love trashed. Ooh, I hope no one from New York listens to that.
Okay.
I love, but like kind of garbage places.
Like
I like
no,
the
like
grunge.
Like rust on a city, like
a
little dirt.
Yeah.
Like
yes.
Where's the scars? Yeah,
yes,
totally.
I love the grunge. I love how New York is always awake. And I don't know that I'll always like that.
Yeah.
40 years from now, when I'm 56, but I do love that about it. So I go there quite often. Because it's just a city that, like, I have all these great memories of being there when I was 21.
Where'd you go to college?
Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. But I did an internship for 6 months in New York City. I moved up there for it, for Saturday Night Live.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And
oh, so you were a page?
Nope, that's different. That's like Kenneth on 30 Rock. He's a page. The page program's for when you graduate college. I was still in college, so I got credit and free food.
Oh. But you still, like, were an intern, like, ran stuff and did, because, like, my cousin was a page for the Today Show.
Yeah, nice.
So, like, she worked there. Did they make you work the crazy hours?
Yeah, I mean, like, on Saturdays.
That's an experience?
Wild. I was right next to the pages, but I was a music intern because at the time I knew what I was interested in was music and live television, and I thought, what better place to, like, see if I really like the pace of that than SNL when you're in New York, right?
Yeah.
And so it was crazy. I'd work 16-hour days on Saturdays, but I got to meet some amazing people, and it was just an incredible time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm kind of equally terrified of New York, and for a lot of the reasons that you've spoken of. But that is one of those situations where I wouldn't think twice about, you know,
right?
Yeah.
Like jumping headfirst into it. And,
you get Outback Steakhouse. Well, I mean, like, that's what I chose to order.
I
guess I could have, now looking back, every Friday night I ordered Outback Steakhouse on SNL's dime because I had to be there from 6 p.m. till like midnight. And I would just watch the live feed or, like, sometimes have to go do things for the, whoever the musical guest was, but they usually weren't there on Friday nights. But I would choose Outback Steakhouse.
Is there one, like, nearby?
It delivers to 30 Rock.
That is so funny.
Oh, you mean nearby here? Like
no,
you
no, no,
Outback
no,
now?
No, like
yeah, right now, at this very moment.
Just the idea that there's an Outback Steakhouse, like, again, this is what a hayseed I am. It's like, the idea that there's an Outback Steakhouse inside of, like, the city limits of New York, like,
are you kidding?
The property value isn't
oh,
so
man.
Much that an Outback would wouldn't be appropriate there.
Hell no, it's absolutely appropriate there. Outback Steakhouse, first of all, is amazing. Second of all, of course it's going to be in Manhattan. And let me tell you, the Olive Garden too, and I will fight to the death for the Olive Garden. I think that people don't give it the credit it deserves. And there's one in Times Square, and it's one of the worst Olive Gardens for service, but one of the best for being in New York and being at the Olive Garden. But look,
it's like the only place you can't find one Italian.
I mean, look, but like if I wasn't, if I hadn't lived there, I wouldn't, like, if I was just visiting, I probably wouldn't go to the Olive Garden. I would still go to the Olive Garden.
That's going
to
be, yeah.
I would still go there, though, because it's the Times Square Olive Garden. But no, like, I make it sound like I just ate chain food and, like, hung out in Dr. Oz's dressing room. And, like, I feel like I did some actual work while I was there at the time.
You clearly learned enough about music and live television to not want to be working in it right now. What about it did you try to work in it when you came back to Austin? Or
when I came back, because I had another year of college to get through, right? So I came back and I had previously worked for the Austin Film Festival for 3 years as a contract employee. And that was cool, being around screenwriters like you were talking about earlier, and just creative people, and going to panels. And I remember one of the first panels actually that I saw there was the year they awarded John Lasseter, who's the head of Pixar, right? Mm-hmm. Disney Pixar. I know he has a lot of death threats against him because he's the head of Disney Pixar.
Wow.
And now I believe he's disgraced because of the Me Too movement. Can't remember. But at the time, he hadn't been. So this was inspiring at the time. Now it's not. But one of the first panels I saw, it was John Lasseter, Caroline Thompson, who wrote Edward Scissorhands, and Hart Hansen, who wrote Bones, that TV show.
Oh.
Anyways, they were talking, and one of the questions was, like, basically, what's your favorite movie or something? Great question for a film festival concert.
It's a good starter.
Yeah. And
it's the 47th question.
And his,
it has been waiting for an hour.
His answer, he immediately knew. Because for me, I'd have to be like, I don't know, did I love Josie and the Pussycats more than the third Lord of the Ring movie? But he immediately knew that he just was like, Dumbo. Dumbo is absolutely one of the best stories of all time, because Austin Film Festival is the screenwriters' festival. It's all right. About storytelling. He was like, it's one of the best stories of all time because the main character never says a word. And yet it's this emotional journey. And he's totally right. I watched Dumbo after that. And I hadn't seen it since I was a kid.
Swear to God, he said something.
And yeah. It was just beautiful. I mean, it really is just the simplicity, like the power of storytelling without even any words, which as improvisers, like, you get into it and you think you have to fill the space with talking all the time. But I love sitting in the silence now. On stage, and I love making the audience sit in the silence.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's almost as powerful sometimes as just, like, something really meaningful, like, spoken.
Oh, absolutely.
But to answer your question, I did come back from SNL in New York, and I'd worked on a documentary film while I was up there, too. Like, I tried to, like, see, do I like film and television? Do I not? And I came back here, and in Austin, there's tons of live music. Not super easy to make a living doing that if you're a musician or if you're working gig to gig, right? But there is a famous television show here called Austin City Limits that actually started the same year as SNL. And Austin City Limits, I mean, is huge, right? And so I did work there I started as an intern, and then they hired me on to do hospitality for the bands that would come through. And it was so different from SNL, just like how Austin's different from New York. In New York, at SNL, it was a well-oiled machine. It was incredible, but it was so busy and so people were stressed around you. They still had it together, but you've got these big stars and just it's more stressful. And at ACL, it's like the bands that roll through might be the biggest fans in the world, but they understand this is public television. You are on PBS. Which I watch a lot of PBS. And
I love PBS.
It's great. I love PBS and NPR.
I was going to say,
as a new parent, I do watch a lot of PBS with my child. I want to put that out there.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was just saying, you gotta inflect PBS like NPR.
PBS.
Or nothing makes sense.
NPR.
The PBS.
Yeah. And so I did, I came back and I did ACL, and the whole feel of it was just different. Everyone there is just, I mean, SNL has their angels too, right? But like everyone at ACL, it's just this little adorable family, and they're so welcoming. They're so wonderful. And the bands that come through, I think, feel that love. And ACL, you're a band who's performing an hour-long show, basically, but you are the ones that you get to tell stories in between songs. It's like a full show of your performance. SNL, you come on, you play a couple songs, but we're not getting to know you necessarily.
Yeah.
Unless you're really good. So it's just
Or you're the host.
Different. Don't they, do they, like, raffle off, like, half the tickets of each one, of each ACL taping?
They do. They raffle off, like, most of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
So, doing hospitality for the bands, does that mean, did you have access to the writers? Was that something you had to, like, maintain?
Yep.
Yeah?
Wow. Not at SNL. So, at SNL, of course, yeah. I was just, like, having to order food for One Direction.
Yeah.
Or whatever, right? Like, I remember, like, having to order crabs. And then at
like a sack of crabs, like
I can't remember
crab legs or
all I remember
crabs as Outback had available.
I remember One Direction, Harry Styles. I was like, we need to order North Carolina barbecue from Brother Jimmy's because that's what I wanted that day. And so I pulled out that menu, and he got something that was crab something.
Really soft shell crab, maybe, or
no, because it's Brother Jimmy's.
Well, I'm just trying to think of, like, Carolina crabs, and that's, like, a big thing there, but
I don't know.
You wanted barbecue, and he was like, what crab stuff do they have? What crab-like items?
They delivered, and they had fried green tomatoes, and I love fried green tomatoes,
big Carolina
both the movie
thing.
And the food. what was I saying?
I was talking about Harry Styles likes other writers and stuff.
Oh, so at SNL, I was mostly, like, ordering food or, like, taking them to, like, if they had to shower, we'd go, I'd lead them to the shower. I don't know.
You showered them, I get it.
No, I didn't shower with anyone.
Yeah, that seems fun.
And then
you were holding the water hose.
There's a glass partition, like, and you had, like, rubber gloves, like you're changing out, like,
a
nuclear reactor or something. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I should list on my resume, bathed Dave Grohl. 100%. No, I did not do that.
You should put that on your special skills.
But at ACL, it was, I would have to set up the rooms. But the beautiful thing is when bands, these big bands are on tours and they're stopping at, like, arenas or even clubs, you do have to, like, fulfill their rider,
right,
which sometimes can be extensive. But when you're a publicly funded television show, you get to guilt them a little bit and be like, you know, we just really don't have the resources to get everything. Like, what do you absolutely have to have? And there were some just amazing, I'm trying to remember, Sturgill Simpson, I think, just wanted, like, a bottle of alcohol and, like, some tea or something. Like, there were some real low-key people.
It's like literally any alcohol.
Yeah.
And some sweet tea.
Yeah, and I think people were just excited to be on that show because of its history. Like, the people who really got it, I mentioned, like, Dave Grohl, like, the Foo Fighters. I worked with them at both SNL and ACL, which was interesting to be in different settings with them. And just the respect that they have for the history and the longevity of that show. The fact that it's really the only, like, live music television show that, you know, has been running for, like, over 25 years. I mean,
what a fascinating view that you've had into these two live shows, these, like, two major live shows.
But very different.
Totally. But you're right in that they both sort of exemplify the city that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, New York City is busy and intense, mm-hmm. and people don't have time for your bullshit, and they will tell you to your face. And then, but in Austin, I mean, it's like, people want to give you a hug and, like, make sure you're all right and make sure you've had some barbecue before you've left.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, it was...
I guess that's why I want to stay in Austin.
Right? I mean, like, it's very... It was very different, but it was interesting to kind of do them back-to-back and start to see, like, the differences. And I miss things about both. And obviously, I keep in touch with the ACL family because we're I'm right here in their city, you know? But New York taught me, like, a lot of things, a lot of lessons, I think, about myself. But I didn't realize it till, like, later. Like, maybe, like, this week.
Sure.
Because
that happens a lot, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a while to sometimes digest full experiences.
Yeah.
So you've worked on these two major shows, mm-hmm. and now you run your own festival. Did you use the stuff that you learned in both of those to create Betty Fest?
Oh, God. No.
What inspired Betty Fest, then?
So
you're so, like, well, you have so much education in it, and then you're just so... And by the way, to Wendell's, like, Florida comment, I wanted you to know I've always thought of you as very refined and fancy.
Oh, was it just like Florida?
Exactly like Florida. Anyway, tell us about Betty Fest and how you came up with it.
So I didn't create Betty Fest.
Okay, sorry.
I am a co-producer of it now with two other amazing women from the Austin comedy community. And I do think that the experiences at SNL and ACL, they just got me, like, thinking about events. Mm-hmm. And live events, and just coordinating things, which the sick part of me loves the details and loves managing and coordinating things. And then the other part of me is like, but I want to be creative and do and write things and whatever. Betty Fest started by a troupe called Patio Talk, when an all-female troupe at Cold Town. And Betty Fest, for those who don't know, is an all-ladies comedy festival that happens once a year here in Austin. And it features the best all-lady improv troupes, stand-up comedians that you're going to find
anywhere.
How long
has it been going on?
I think this is the fifth year.
Okay.
So the first 2 years, Patio Talk did it at Cold Town Theater. They had a weekly show on Wednesdays. And so for, like, 1 month, I think they would just have a different guest troupe each Wednesday, and it would just be all women, and they called it Betty Fest for that whole month. So then when me and Kim Lowry and Lily Lopez started it, it's because Patio Talk all moved. They moved to New York. Good for them. So we didn't want to let it die, because a lot of troupes in Austin formed so that they could perform at Betty Fest. Like, it really encouraged women to get together and make troupes, even if you didn't, like, really know anybody. And back then, you could walk into, it wasn't surprising to walk into Cold Town or any theater in Austin and see men performing. You never saw, like, an all-women show. You know what I mean? So it was just really encouraging, the spirit of it, when they created it. So we didn't want to let that die when they moved away. But we knew that there had just been, like, this huge influx of women getting together and collaborating, more so than when they started Betty Fest, which there was a real need for them to start Betty Fest. But now we're in this space, I think, in Austin, where there are a lot of women getting together with other women to do sketch troupes, improv, video, whatever. And so we didn't want to let it die. We didn't do it how they had done it before, which was at, you know, one space as a weekly event. We wanted to just do one big blowout night. And so we did it at Spider House for the past 2 years and sold it out, and it's for charity. So all the donations last year went to the Lilith Fund for reproductive rights. And then this year we're gonna blow it out even more, and do it on Saturday, November 3rd, 2018 at the historic Scoot Inn. So we have a little bit of a venue change there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Scoot Inn is awesome.
Yeah. It's a great spot, and it was, you know, C3 owns it now, so it's just a little bit easier to move over there. And also, my work as a digital marketing manager for C3 Presents, I think has really informed, like, my view of festivals, because that's what I work on 365 days a year over there. And I go to a lot of festivals. Granted, they're music festivals, but, like, just like SNL or ACL, like, everyone there is a professional, and they know exactly what they're doing. So it's taught me a lot about how to run events, just in general.
So do you go to sort of, like gather information in, like, a sort of, like, census kind of way of, like, what adds up to a successful festival, or...
What do you mean?
Like, you go to a lot of festivals for your job? Is
that we, like... produce.
Okay. There we go. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought it was, like... Let's see what a festival is supposed to be across the world kind of thing.
No, we own...
That'd be an awesome job for you, though.
Yeah. We do have international festivals that we produce, but and we're part of the larger Live Nation family. But mostly I go to our own festivals. I do attend some other ones. Okay. But these are all music festivals. Like, I would love to go to a comedy festival. And I've gone to some before, right? Like, Del Close Marathons in New York.
Yeah.
I want to see what other, like, comedy festivals are out there that are supporting women. Like, really supporting women.
Yeah.
There's one called... That's in its second year. It's in San Francisco. And it's the same group that does, like, Outside Lands Music Festival in Bonnaroo. And I'm blanking on the name of it right now. But I went to a panel during South By. And it was with the president of Comedy Central... And the head talent buyer for this comedy festival that had, like, a side of music. Usually it's a music festival with a side of comedy, mm-hmm. but this one really focused on the comedy. And they were talking about it and how they, like, decided to do it. It's these two just, like, old white guys up there talking about their process for deciding they wanted to do this. And I looked at the poster and there were actually, like, you know, women on the poster. And so... But I know they book, and being in the business of music festivals, I understand the intricacies and the politics and how sometimes it is difficult to book 50-50 women versus men on a music festival. Mm-hmm. Depends on who's touring, who can, it just, on a lot of factors, right? And I know that most music festivals, my own included, will get flack sometimes for, like, not having enough women. And this guy books music festivals too, so I asked a question at the panel after they were done talking, because I noticed that on this comedy festival poster there were some women, right? And basically I was like, do you find it easier to book women on a comedy festival than you do on a music festival? Because obviously a lot of music festivals get flack for that. They didn't really, they just pointed at the poster and said, I think we're doing a pretty good job. And I was like, oh man, but that's not what your answer is supposed to be, sir.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's just,
even if you don't know, you need to have somebody on your PR team tell you what to say.
I know.
We've got the minimum requirements for you to not hassle us, so. Yeah.
There are ladies, fully clad ladies there, on this poster.
Those are three lady names on that piece of paper.
I mean, there's just definitely a need for Betty Fest. I'm really proud to co-produce it, and I actually, on the way over here, I was thinking about it. I'm only in all female troops.
Oh.
Than any others.
That's fascinating.
I've done shows where men have been in them.
Sure.
But I'm just in all female troops. And I think part of that's because I came into improv and I went up in these classes with a lot of women in my improv class that continued on to each level. And I think that's rare. I think it's mostly men, right? But I loved being with mostly women. And I think that just seeped into my, like, my own personal sort of direction with improv. I don't know if it's what it is, but it just, that's how it happened.
No, I think that's fascinating for you to even, like, think about that. And,
yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, there were a lot of ladies in my class, so that's what I got used to. That makes total sense.
And also, like, women are amazing.
Oh, of course. Especially in this town. There's some really great ladies in this town.
Yeah. And
really hardworking, hilarious, put on some amazing shows, yourself included. Just really people that younger girls who, you know, get out of college and move to Austin can really have a lot of wonderful heroes in town. With all the stuff that goes on, for sure.
Yeah, the numbers that ladies are putting up in this town is amazing as far as, like, you know, the people that I started with and, or, you know, that started right before me that all are doing, like, awesome, like, really great stuff right now, or, like, their own, you know, solo shows or, you know, producing, you know, their own, you know, open mics or whatever. Like, I don't know, that yield was a lot higher than all the dudes that I came up with too, because I feel like dudes will just keep going for their ego's sake, you know? Like, and so it's like guys will hang around, but then they kind of drop off after a while once it, you know, like it sort of isn't like fiscally viable anymore, or, you know, like maybe their jokes just suck and they realize that for the first time or whatever, you know?
I think like men have this like are more prone to confidence than women, and improv has definitely helped me, like, gain confidence to go up on stage and do something like I would have never done before. And I think part of that, or maybe part of the reason that I love performing with women so much and didn't even realize that I pretty much exclusively do, is that, like, women have certain pressures on them that maybe just apply more so to women. And I'm thinking, like, when you, I was talking with a friend about this today, when you want to devote time to being creative, you want to set aside time to being creative, at least for me, then I'm, my brain starts to be like, oh, but you've got to do, like, you've got to clean your house, and you've got to, like, stay on top of your shit at work so that they take you seriously because you're at a disadvantage because you're not a guy. You know, you've got, like, your work pressures and just your life pressures of things people want you to be. So when you finally take time to go and, you know, be creative and have that time to yourself,
yeah,
it's almost like borrowed time. It's stolen time,
yeah,
because you feel guilty that you're not doing these other things. So are you really, like, 100% able to focus on your creativity in those moments? I struggle with that, and I'm trying to get better at it and not let those outside sort of pressures hinder that time that I really take to be basically, like, you know, creative or productive in a way that I find fulfilling.
Yeah, I wonder. I'd love to clock, you know, a different, maybe in the next year or so, over the students that I teach, to see how many people continue through and, like, how many people start producing and doing things afterwards. Because, I mean, there are a significant number of great lady producers in Austin. Really, like, creating wonderful both school programs with people like Shayna Merlin, and then, like, you know, putting there's a huge team of women that are part of the team that runs Hideout. Like, there's just a lot of really great women out there creating shows and building things. I don't know. I wonder if there is, are more women that come out of classes and, like, do stuff than the guys. I don't know.
I think you have to, like, create, like, a real pathway. And like I said, I think more women are just performing in general than were 5 years ago in Austin. Like, I really think we've had this, like, kind of renaissance, and I think it's ongoing, which is amazing. I think you have to, like, show a pathway for any student that's in any level of classes. Like, how are you going to become a producer? How are you going to put on your own show? I got out of classes. I submitted a show to Coaltown, got it on the schedule for eventually a main stage because I wanted to perform. Like, it was literally me being like, I don't have a class anymore, but I want to be on stage. And, like, took that leap into producing something. And I just think that the women that have come before us, right, have to make that avenue available and visible to other women, because I feel like that confidence gap from when you're, like, a level one improv student to when you're, like, I think I only recently got confident in my improv. And I mean, like, with Garage, which is my all women troupe that performs every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at Fallout Theater. I think, like, that's where I really started getting confident, was in this weekly show, because I'd been in weekly shows before that didn't click. They just, it didn't, I was nervous to go out, and I was like, I don't feel like I should be this nervous every single time I step on stage, and it's because I was performing with people that were not as collaborative on stage. Like, maybe it was just some misfiring, or maybe it was just, let's see, dudes being cocky and steamrolling over their scene partners, you know?
Yeah.
And it is a different vibe. And that's not to say that, like, Wendell, you're amazing. There are great guys out there.
Not.
From Florida.
not
Florida.
All right.
Like, I think,
because, I mean, we started around similar times, because I remember when I first met you, it was, like, through Aaron. And then I remember having a conversation with you about, like, all right, yeah, I'm actually starting to take classes, and it wasn't very long after me. And I was gonna say, like, just, and then you were just in, like, in front of everybody for, like, you did so well immediately that what you said about, like, having to work a little bit harder to get people to take you seriously is something. When you said that, I was like, oh shit, I have never thought about trying to make people take me seriously because I hate it when they do. Like, I'm bothered when people, like, genuinely, like, think I'm gonna do something very well. So it's like, I was like, oh crap, I feel like an asshole. Because, like, yeah, no, like, that drive has never been there for me. And in a way, not necessarily because, like, I'd lived this luxurious life. I just, that is something that I never had to once think about. And that makes so much sense now. Kind of, like, in the sense of, like, this huge boom right now. It's just the effort that was already being put in to everything else.
Yeah, and having, like, started out with, like, film and television sort of, like, as something I had my sights set on, and then sort of moving into the music and production, like, industry, like, live music events. Like, there's a lot of sexism in both places. And sure. And there is a lot of pressure on women to keep up, like, to do the work and to put yourself out there and to take initiative and be confident in yourself so that you gain respect. Because I think it's sometimes I look at my male coworkers and I'm like, wow, it's a lot easier for you to gain that respect than me, who feels like I have to constantly prove myself. This is why I like improv. Because with improv, I can just turn off my brain. And yeah. I can just be dumb. And I think it's like therapy now, you know? Like, I don't skip my weekly show on nights that I'm tired or stressed out because I'm like, I'm gonna go be stupid.
Yeah.
For like 30 minutes with people that are super fun and nice and cool and that I really love. Like, it's amazing. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, it's, as adults, like, no matter, you know, like, where you're from, like, as an adult, you sort of, like, once you get to that point, you, like, imagination isn't really, like, a thing that everybody is doing all the time. You know, it's, like, there's not really an emphasis on just, like, hey, why don't you just, like, I don't know, think of a new way to get downstairs or, like, you know, like, make something fun for no reason, and or just think of something cool for a little bit. It's like, once you become an adult, it's all like, hey, contribute, or, you know, like, get out of the way and get a drug test if you want, you know, government assistance, like, that kind of thing, right. You know, it's like, there's all these things where it's just like, you are capital as a person, so, like, stop lollygagging, stop, like, fucking around. You got to do that, and, you know, that's why you're capital is so low right now anyway, so you have to work extra hard. So it's like, the idea of just getting to go and just play make-believe, like in recess when you were a kid, when, you know, like, everybody was somebody from their favorite show or whatever. It's like, that just, you would never think that, but it's like, just getting to do that thing that adults aren't supposed to do technically, you know, like in a social way,
is amazing.
Yeah, the catharsis that comes with it, even you know, like, I don't know, even if it's, like, for four people in a crowd, like, in the middle of the week, you know, on a show that doesn't really, like, pack it out. Like, if you had fun doing what you were doing with, you know, your troop mates, and those four people, like, you squeezed the laugh out of them, you know, despite that being kind of difficult. Like,
yeah. It's something really special.
It's like, obviously it's not for the money, so, you know, it's for those four people laughing and me, you know, enjoying hanging out with my friends.
Sometimes I think it's, and this is something that I deal with when I teach level one students, is I actually think that improv is more fun for the performers than it is for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I strive to give them ways to communicate with the audience during the show, or certain things, like I try to explain to them the idea of the three beats is to include them. They're not having as much fun because we're making everything up. Everything's wild and exciting for us. The three beats are to remind them we're with them.
Yeah.
And to bring them into the magic that we sort of have trained to do. But it can be so hard. Like when you're mentioning performing with, you know, for a small audience or something like that.
Yeah.
Or
like spread out people that aren't together or anything. Like they're like all literally all corners
everywhere.
Of the state or of the
or the other troops you're talking about where it like didn't feel as comfortable. Like
mm-hmm.
if the performers are not having the most fun of everyone in the room, I think, you know, it's not as good a show. Like, I go to watch improv to watch those people have a good time. It's I guess also that's the reason why I teach, because I just want, I love watching these little buds turn into beautiful flowers, you know, by the end of the time that we get to spend with one another. So when you're talking about when you have transitioned from, you know, class troops that were, you know, multigendered, and now you're, you know, in all female troops, and that makes you feel better, of course, because, you know, you get to be, you get to feel more comfortable. You don't, you're not held back by anybody else. And yeah. And then when you get to have that joy, it spreads to everybody in the room, and they're like, this is the best time ever.
What I really love about the current state, I think, of the Austin comedy community when it comes to women, is I feel like people, we have these stereotypes of girls just being catty to each other, just kind of like attacking each other generally in life with this, a certain ferocity that men don't seem to attack each other with. Like, girls can be vicious, right? That I really feel like there's no point to it. And I really feel like the women of the Austin comedy community lift each other up. And I love that. And I think there's more to be done, for sure. But I like the feeling. I like how it feels right now. And I think we're just going to go to amazing places. But yeah, I like doing improv because I get to fuck with my friends on stage. I do. It's like, yeah, when you're fucking with someone and you're just, like, having fun and you are in a performative state. I mean, we had a show like a couple months ago. There were three people in the audience. Those three people had an amazing time because we had an amazing time.
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you gotta think about it. It's like, in a general, like, wholesale sense, getting someone to laugh really isn't that hard unless that person is having, like, a terrible day or, like, genuinely just does not, like, want to be happy right then. But, like, people that come into a theater that pay money to see a show, or, like, don't, you know, even if it's, like, a free show, like, they came and sat down there with the, like, intent to enjoy something.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, and, yes.
You know, it's, like, so for them, like, every laugh is something that, like, that's what that chair, that's what sitting in that chair in that building was supposed to afford them anyways. And also, yeah, people are so stressed out all the time. Like, laughing is something that should, I mean, really is just as easy as, like, finding that, like, that one thing that, you know, everybody can get on board with, or specifically that works for them. And it's like, the performers are working to make, like, this cohesive thing, and, like, it for them it's so complex, and they're so proud of every little, like, callback and every, like, string they attach. But, like, those people, generally speaking, came in just going, all right, like, I got, like, 9 chuckles that I'm just been waiting to unload in this space right now. And, like,
chuckles.
And again, yeah, it's like making people laugh is like, and shouldn't be hard, because unless you're a monster, you know, generally speaking, like, humor is that one thing that everybody can use to get, you know, closer to each other.
Ugh, I don't laugh out loud very often.
My audience, I find things funny. Monsters.
Okay.
I still find things funny.
I know, okay, I'm the same way, and I realized this when I moved in with my old roommate, because I caught him laughing at a movie that he had already seen that he was watching by himself in the living room, like guffawing and clapping, and I was like, who's that for? Why is he doing that? Like, nobody's around to, like, note that he enjoys this thing, and I was just like, because, yeah, if I'm watching something, I'll watch, like, a brand new, like, movie that is hilarious, or I used to, and just sit there and just take it in. Like, yeah. I would note everything that was hilarious, but, like, yeah, there was nobody to, like, for me to have that expression for, so, yeah, like, I never would. And I remember just seeing that, and I was like, oh my God, that's bad on my heart, I think. Like, I think I'm gonna die sooner because I, like, stifled that expression, because now I laugh my ass off by myself just watching anything.
See, I don't really laugh, but I enjoy life. And I don't break a lot in scenes. Like, it's really hard to break me because I just, like, I don't know. I just don't laugh audibly. And I think for some people it is a performative act when they're, like, an audience member.
Yeah.
They want you to know they're having a good time. And, like, that's good for them if that's, like, how they're going to express it. But I don't know. I'm just, like, not that, like that. But I do still enjoy life.
When you teach and or coach, you have to develop a laugh they can hear.
See,
I think just like I'll never be a parent, I'll probably never teach and or coach.
Well,
just mean, because,
really?
Like,
you'd be
I
great
think
at
so.
It.
No, I, well, I'm very judgmental, so that's why I'd probably be okay at it. I can pick at things, but I could turn them into positive
yeah.
things, like, you're really great at, right? But I am very judgmental. But I think it's one of my strengths.
See, I realized that, like, after getting into the comedy scene here, that I rarely laugh at someone, like in the comedy scene, if you're going to be friends with people, generally speaking, you're going to have a lot of bits thrown at you, and you're going to throw a lot of bits out. Like, you know, it's just, that's sort of how the conversation kind of is driven, is everybody just being mm-hmm. funny. I have a hard time laughing, like, giving somebody a laugh they genuinely deserve, like, to their face. If it's
just
not,
in a
like,
conversation?
Yeah. Like, if we're all, like, in a circle and stuff. Like, I have a hard time, like, really, I don't know, because a lot of the times it's like we're in the conversation, I'm bad about, like, getting three lines ahead sometimes. So, like, I don't know. It's one of those things. Like, sometimes there would be something really funny, and I know it's funny, and I feel bad that I don't, like, give them the thing. But it's like, I generally don't need... I don't ask that of them either,
I guess. Don't pity laugh.
Right.
I don't pity laugh either.
Yeah, you can... Sometimes I will clap and, like, scream laugh. Like, if, like, there's something that is just universally
undeniable.
What's a
scream laugh? Go ahead.
Like, like that kind of thing.
Oh, that's a classic Wendell.
Yeah. That's
what Wendell
and I
learned
that.
Laugh.
And I learned that here. I developed that here because I was like, growing up in a small town, I was the, as most dudes are that come into improv, I was the funny one. So I was the one that like manufactured the laughs more so than like everybody else. That was my in for the social groups that I was in, because everybody was either like a jock or a redneck or something. Like the only way I could get in to the party was to be funny. And that meant I, you know, everybody that tried to like make a joke to me, it was either very base or very like, just I don't know, offensive or just lame. So like,
ugh, people are totally offensive. I'm offensive sometimes.
Well,
but
yeah.
I like comedy that brings you together. I think comedy should do that. But I also kind of like divisive comedy sometimes, like things that some people aren't gonna find funny. Other people are, and that just brings a different group together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can appreciate that kind of stuff, but...
Do you think maybe it's because you both study comedy so that it's more analytical for you? Because I have a hard time watching, like, sitcoms or standard, like, slapstick, what Netflix would call a late-night comedy, because it's formulaic.
Yeah.
And I can follow it too easily.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, this just happened. And, oh, they've done it twice. Hold on, let me wait. And go. Like, it's too simple for me because, you know, we've studied it. So because we've been shown the handbook, as it were, it's, like, a little harder. So now I hardly watch comedy anymore. I watch a lot of stand-up because I feel like stand-up has different ways that people go about it.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like when I watch stand-up, I'm, like, supporting people. Like, I can't leave my house right now, but I'll watch you on your Netflix special because this is what I can do for you. I can give you my numbers. I can be the Nielsen rating person who watched that one show. Like, but... I don't know. I can't watch. I have a really hard time watching sitcoms.
I guess, like, when it comes to improv, I feel like I don't watch it to laugh. Like, if I go see a show, it's not necessarily to laugh. It's to, like, have this, like, amazing moment where, like, the story comes together in different ways that you couldn't even predict.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what they're going to do on stage. Sometimes you do. But the way that they do it is what's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't go there to, like... laugh. If I do happen to laugh, even though I never do, then that's like a really cool surprise for me, right? I don't really laugh when I watch movies or TV shows or anything like that. And maybe it is because it's like a little bit formulaic for me, but personally, I think it's because I grew up a very worried person. Like, anxiety through the roof, like my whole childhood. And I think, like, starting improv, ironically, gave me, like, more confidence to sort of move past that anxiety. But I think just always being, like, a little bit worried, like, in conversations, like you were saying, if I'm in a conversation with somebody and they're kind of in the moment in the conversation, but maybe I'm thinking ahead or maybe I'm thinking about something else because my brain's just going everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a very... I think that happens for a lot of people.
Yeah. And
laugh.
Normally if I do it, it's because I want that person to, like me. I generally, like... I'm trying to keep up with how funny they are. So, like, I will... Like, I won't laugh at something that they said that was generally funny because I'm trying to be as good at them in that conversation. Or, like, I'm trying to, like, give them the best version of me, which generally is, like, over-prepared. Like, I don't do it because I disregard, like, what they have to say. It's more like it's a validation thing, I think, more than anything, which, you know, is super uncommon in the comedy community. But
nobody needs validation here.
Yeah.
I don't. I have started to, like, care less what people think of me, but I also attribute that to the people I'm around and just, like, the badass, just, like, people that just are like, I don't fucking care if you like it.
Yeah.
The people that inspire me. That's actually, I think, an Amy Poehler thing. Amy Poehler said, I don't fucking care if you like it.
You ever read her book, Yes, Please? It's very derisive. Like, there's a lot of parts in it where she's, like, essentially like, yeah, this happened. If you don't like it, that's too bad for you. Like, or, like, then I figured this out. Yeah, it seems weird, but you're going to get over that.
Yes.
Like, it's just the tone of it is very, like, come at ya. And she's from Boston. I'm from Boston. Mm. So when I read it, I was like, ah, I get it. It's a Boston girl.
It's like, maybe this is, like, my late 20s thing is that I kind of finally don't care. Because, like, growing up, being, like, insecure and having that anxiety, like, you do care what people think about you.
Sure.
Right? But, like, now I'm getting to the point where I channel some of my best friends sometimes when I'm like, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, just to let that go feels so good. And that's, again, why I like being on stage and just doing whatever comes into my head, making up scenes, doing improv, is because I'm like, I don't care. At this point, I'm like, it'll either be fine or it won't. And it's like, you'll either like me or you don't. I think I'm a likable person. I like me. But that...
You're engaging. I was going to say, like, I've thought that since the first time I ever met you. And it was like... No, I think it's great to get to that point because... I don't know. Sometimes you can get to that point and then go, like, overboard and, like, sort of, like... I don't know. Like, this is me. You know, if you can't handle me in my worst days, then you don't deserve me on my best days kind of things. Yeah. And it's like, also, people don't have to talk to you. Like, you know, like, I realize that it's, and it's more just, like, insecurities from growing up and stuff, but it's like, generally speaking, I would like everybody to, like, stick around with me.
I feel like the people who say that kind of stuff, though, with that air of negativity and, like, attack to it, are probably more self-conscious than you are.
Yeah.
Like, they because lack... their way of expressing themselves is to be like, you don't like it, forget it. And that's just pulling people...
To put up a wall.
Yeah.
I think, like, there's this perfect combination of not giving a fuck and self-awareness that you have to have to be, like, in my mind, the perfect person. Like, that self-awareness is what makes you, I think, not be like that,
right?
Still be, like, an open person who's, like, wants to engage with other people.
Yeah.
You can't just totally not give a fuck.
Yeah.
Well, also, as an artist...
You've got to, like, shower a couple times.
You can, When you're an artist, you have to be vulnerable sometimes. Like, you really do have to open yourself up. And in those moments, even if you're just on stage with your friends fucking around, a moment appears.
Yeah.
And then you're having this deep discussion in front of 100 people, and you can't help it. You just answer what is correct. Or any number of the game shows I've seen around town that are about, like, people telling their own secrets. People want to see vulnerability. People, one of the things that I think is really interesting is that the people always attach themselves to another person's vulnerability because that's what they feel too. They're like, oh, I do that. Like, the most responses I've ever gotten on Twitter are to the saddest of my tweets. Like, none of the, like, everything's going great or, like, I'm a badass. Like, instead it's like, I'm having a hard day, so I had 14 ice cream cones. And people are like, this is so great. I was like, not a joke. You know, like, like, you know, the vulnerability that you can put out there, I think, balanced, like you're saying, the self-awareness with strength in yourself. Like, if you can be strong enough to be vulnerable, that's an excellent part of being an artist.
I think that part of, like, being on stage is being vulnerable. When the improvisers that I like to watch are the ones that are vulnerable and that play with silence, kind of like I was saying earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, playing with silence, being vulnerable on stage, I think it can create really beautiful moments. And that's why I like storytelling as well. I don't personally do it, because the one time I did, it was a disaster.
Just one time, though?
Yeah, it was the first time the show had been put up. I can't remember the name of the show, but I also don't want them to remember this. But they were like, will you be on our debut show? Will you be one of our storytellers? And I was like, sure. And I didn't practice, because I'm not used to practicing. With improv, I just make it up, or I do rehearsals or whatever, but I don't have to practice.
Yeah.
And I totally fucked up, y'all. I just talked about how when I moved to New York and I was 21, I like threw up all over it. And then like halfway through my story, I'm like really into it, and I'm looking out and I'm like, you know what? Nobody cares about your drunk stories. Nobody cares. But I really like when other people do storytelling, and I feel like I'm getting more and more into that when it's good. But other than that, I pretty much just like exclusively watching horror and action movies, because I have to have something like fast paced.
Oh.
My brain. I just need it.
I get that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I like doomsday movies.
Oh, but yeah. Yeah. Like Roland Emmerich, blowing up the White House, or 2012ing everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Day After Tomorrow, which I think they changed the name of that movie.
No, there were two of them. There were like two movies. It was kind of like Deep Impact and Armageddon. There was like Day After Tomorrow and then the Last Day, or like there was like two movies that were the exact same.
It's not the one, The Day the Earth Stood Still. That's a different.
No,
that's with Keanu Reeves, right?
Yes, and also an old, yeah. That's
the, oh yeah,
they did
yeah,
a remake of
Black and White.
Yeah.
I just watched that the other day, so I was like, wait, is that what that is?
The Keanu one.
Okay, did Day After Tomorrow have did that have
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yep. Okay, so the other one. I feel like the world froze again also. Like, it was one of those things, like, something happened and the world turned into a big ice ball. There were two of those. But again, there have always been at least two of those every year.
Every decade.
Yeah, yeah, like...
Love those movies.
Did you see Geostorm?
No.
Those movies.
What's that one that had, they're all on a train, but the outside world is totally frozen. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Snowpiercer?
Yes, that's a good movie. You should watch Snowpiercer next.
That is a fucking weird movie.
Oh,
it's directed
by,
a very notable Korean director, and, but, like, with a fairly large, like cast from, like, Hollywood, like Chris Evans,
Chris
Tilda
Evans,
Swinton,
yeah.
Yeah, like, Ed Harris, isn't it? Yeah, just, like, some, like, OGs. But there are very, like, tiny little plot elements that just don't necessarily, like, translate over to a Western audience as well. Or, like, I don't know. This guy's used to, like, really not pulling his punches with his, like, big reveals. It is really good, but it's, like, I don't know. Like, Chris Evans talking about, never mind.
I'm fascinated when I watch horror films or something like that from another country, because you're right that there are definitely, like, different levels of things that people find scary.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, what it is that each... You can also even... It's like when you watch movies and you can guess what decade they're from based on who the, like, what nationality the enemy is from.
Yep.
Like, you're like, oh, Russia, is this now or early 80s? Oh, okay, great. You know, and it, like, switches up occasionally who it is. It's never Chinese, by the way. It's never Chinese. You know why? Because the Chinese film market is the number one film market.
Yeah.
That's why they're never the enemies in any of the movies.
Wasn't the Red Dawn remake, wasn't it originally the Chinese, and they switched it to the North Koreans? Like right before they put it up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah, because originally it was Russians, and...
And that made sense.
And then, you know, China, one of the last, like, at least on the outside, seemingly successful communist nations, you know, and it just to be like,
hey, they might hear this.
I was going to say, like...
It's entirely possible.
China could hear this, and we're basically in a trade war with them.
Nah, China owns America. Don't lie to yourself.
I'm certain they are listening.
Most of the West is owned by China. It's okay.
Do you think the clothes I'm wearing are owned by China?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
From Target.
I think, like,
exclusively.
If the U.S. had to, like, pay them back, like, tomorrow, then they would probably have to do it in people somewhat. I would definitely be on that list of people they would give.
Well, they'd have to give them, like, Kansas to the west.
Yeah,
like,
no, I was going to say, yeah, they would literally...
It would just be like, listen, we're going to take the East Coast, go ahead and take whatever you want.
Or we're gonna give you the bottom half contributing humans in our country right now.
Why would they want that?
Don't they want the best?
They would just throw us off cliffs, is what they would do, because that's what they do there.
Those people are expendable. Sweatshop's gotta keep going. I don't know.
I genuinely worry about drafts, like getting drafted. Like, what crazy time that must have been for Vietnam when they're like, sorry, you don't have a choice now. You're actually gonna have to go, and your life's gonna be on the line. Y'all, things could always be worse.
Sad and realistically, though, is that if they do renew a draft, Wendell's too old and they're not going to ask for women.
That's okay.
I'm just saying, if that happens, even if it happens, I'm definitely too old, and I don't know how old you are, but I assume you're over 21, so you're probably too old.
I was too old when I was 18.
You're 16. Oh, if you're 16, you're right in.
Yeah.
Oh, you're the first one in.
Well,
yeah, like blonde girls who are 16.
They want me to go over.
You're in the front lines.
Super vicious.
You're like, guys, put your guns down. It'd be cool. And everyone's like, all right, that seems right.
Nah.
I went and tried to join the army when I was 18, and my blood was 65, so technically they would.
Oh, no.
No, they were just like, oh, no. Everything on the outside is a lie. You are at Medicare age right now on the inside.
I have something wrong with my knee, so I don't think I could. I cut it open on a desk recently.
Oh.
And
oh, I thought you meant like you had like a pre-existing condition that would have
I cut it on a table. Like the table had a metal piece underneath it. I crossed my legs, gashed my knee. And then should have gotten stitches, but didn't. And so now sometimes I hit it funny on a surfboard because I take a surf workout class 3 times a week where you use a surfboard, and sometimes I hit it funny on my board, and then it just feels super like I hear it.
I imagine it just fucking
hurts.
I imagine you are telling this to the draft board right now as to like why you can't go.
Thing is
I was like so about being drafted like
that,
a week ago, and then
and
this
I
table.
Also only gained like stage confidence like this year, and I've been on the first time I was ever on stage I was in fifth grade. How old are you in fifth grade? 10? 11?
Yeah, 11.
Yeah, I was 10, and so from 10 until like I'm 16, so for the first time in my life, now I've gained it. So I haven't had stage confidence enough to be able to, like, hold myself up in war.
I don't think that that's a requirement.
Stage?
Like, sorry, ma'am, you've got way too much stage experience for us to not draft you.
I don't know. I think they need you to be a
your
pro.
Your confidence levels are through the roof.
Mm-mm. You have to be a pro at object work. You have to be a pro at callbacks. You've got to know the Herald structure inside and out. You've got to be really comfortable with it. And I can't do, I mean, like, even now I'm, you know. I take it all.
Write
back.
A screenplay in which those are the parameters for the new
for
draft.
War.
And right. That and like there are army guys who are all like, okay, what happens next?
Yeah.
If this were to happen, what's the second beat of that?
Yeah.
So, like, what?
Guess what, guys? We're going back to Vietnam. Yeah, it's round two. We learned a lot from the last war, and I think we're gonna go for the heartstrings this time.
Absolutely.
You can't fight the Viet Cong in the jungle, but you can make them love and laugh.
Look, if Beck Bennett or someone is ever president, then I will be
Bennett.
Secretary. I was like trying to think of a. Well, first I was thinking of not famous improviser, but a narcissistic one who is a villain, but I didn't want to say their name. But I think we all know who it is. Listening. Totally could be listening.
I was just saying, that's very nice of you to assume that.
At this point, probably not. But.
Yeah. Like, maybe in the early
maybe
days,
we burned that bridge, but
sure.
I hope they are, and I hope they know that I'm indirectly attacking them very hard right now.
I feel like if that was ever a thing, it was just for... Yeah, never mind. It was just the ones they were a part of.
So, I want to bring us back to creativity as a means of wrapping it up. And I wanted to say, from the stories that you've told us about your like work, from the internship with NBC, and then the internship with Austin City Limits, and now your work with C3, it seems like you are just, I mean, you're star student as far as like, you went out there, you wanted to learn some stuff, you wanted to work in an industry, and now you work in it. I mean, if I were a kid at Southwestern who was like, can I do it? you can do it because Lindsay's done it. And I just, it sounds really awesome. Is there, do you think, like, you are, from what you're learning in your current job, are there any other, like, jobs you aspire to, or, like, other things that you, since you've worked a lot in women in comedy, you're right now creating opportunities for women to do comedy, and you're also working in music, you see the politics there. Are you able to, or interested in moving in that direction, or doing other kinds of work? What are you thinking for the future?
Oh, man.
It's a big question, sorry.
I think I love the festivals we work on, which include Lollapalooza, ACL Music Festival, Voodoo in New Orleans. Like, these are some big events.
Yeah.
And I've learned so much, and I'm going to keep doing it. But I do think that, like, sometimes when I think about, like, what am I missing? Because I do get creative fulfillment through work in certain ways mm-hmm. that are different from just what I choose to do outside of work. I get to, for Voodoo Festival, which is in New Orleans, my big idea last year was I really wanted to design a beignet gun. Turns out you can't really, like, a t-shirt cannon, you can't really shoot beignets because they're, like, frail. But I figured that out. You know what I mean? Like, I get to throw out these, like, cool ideas, and I love that about my job. And I do think, like, when you bring up, like, working with women in comedy and then these, like, music festivals, I do think, like, one thing I'm interested in the future is just continuing to program events that focus on women and ladies and lady lovers can support. I think Girl Boss is doing, like, a lot of cool work, and there's these just, you know, conferences and panels where women get together, and I love that. And I always thought I would go into nonprofit work. That's the funny thing. I really thought I would do nonprofit stuff, but entertainment just had this, like, golden shine around it that I was like, I want to see what I like. Do I like film and TV? Do I like music? What do I like? I think I was always drawn to entertainment too because of doing theater in, like, high school and just, like, having, like, an urge to perform myself. Like, I understand why people do it. But I could see myself in the future, like, programming specifically events for, like, women. I would love to bring Lilith Fair back. Like,
yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
There's some...
This would be the city. This would definitely be the city.
That, yeah.
That would shoot off into the sky like a beautiful bottle rocket.
Yeah, I mean...
Just the amount of Subarus alone here.
I think that'd be incredible. I'd love to do, like, a, like, women in hip-hop event, too. I feel like hip-hop festivals are cool and far, few and far between. Like, the Roots do their... The Roots Picnic in New York, and I think there's some really awesome ladies out there rapping and, like, hustling, man. And, like, I don't think I ever thought, like, I'd be doing that, like, performing in that way. Although I do it with Ariel. I have a duo, Ariel and Lindsay, and we write songs, but just on our ukuleles. And
the way you say Ariel is like the way you say NPR and PBS.
Ariel.
So I was like, who is that a band? Is that an Austin band? And
yeah.
I know exactly
Ariel. Ariel. Yeah, Ariel is exactly the same as PBS and NPR.
Yeah.
But to me, like, Betty Fest is almost like it's the comedy version of Lilith Fair. Like, I want it to be, like, that big and people to be excited about it, like, ramping up for it, like, year-round. And I think we're getting to that point where I think people really are excited about it. So I'm excited to see how it grows at Scoot, which has a larger capacity than Spider House Ballroom and, you know.
Well, you have, like, this, I don't know, like, your career path in itself is this huge, like, I don't know, superpower that would feed into this sort of, I don't know, this path that you're kind of talking about right now.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's like, you, like, coming into improv when you started even, it's like, you were definitely set up to be able to, like, produce and, you know, just to have your ear to the ground in the way you do with, you know, having to work and sort of detail these festivals is, like, that's something, you know, a lot of people... You know, a lot of people come to do improv to, like, learn how to speak in front of people. You know,
yeah.
Like, or, you know, like, they come in just to be able to, like, get over, like, a mild personal hurdle where it's, like, I don't know, everything that you had coming into it is...
Well, I don't know. I feel like I've always been hardworking and ambitious, but I haven't always been a whip. And I don't want to call myself a whip because then I sound like I'm just bragging. But let's pretend that Amy just called me a whip. I feel like now
define
I'm...
Define whip and I'm happy to call you
just like sharp. Like, yeah. I see. Like, takes initiative and, like, contributes. And I wasn't always like that.
I definitely think that you take initiative and contribute.
Yeah, no, it was crazy how Amy called you that and didn't know what it meant.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't sure if whip was meant, like, women in production.
Oh, like a...
Oh, like yeah, like an acronym.
Not yeah, I was like, yep, I get it.
Not at all. That's just using are. It as a characteristic. But when I look for people that I, like, want to work with or, like, that I think are going to be successful, like, interns or something, I look for whips. Yeah. Because I think that's what you need, especially as a woman, to be successful and thrive in really any industry, but definitely the music industry. I also think... One of the parts I skipped when I started working at C3, it was in artist management. So I was not in festival marketing. I was working with big bands, world famous DJs that I will not say, I shouldn't say the names of probably, but like we were doing, I was in artist management, working on like people's careers. And working on other people's careers was cool, and I like learned a lot, even though it was difficult because you're working with artists. But I was like, what about mine? I want to work on mine. So the reason I left artist management was to really hone in on what I liked doing, specific skills. And I don't know that I found like what I like doing enough to like want to do it for the rest of my life. I don't know if I love digital marketing that much, but I do in like nerdy ways find a lot of enjoyment in it, and I love the team that I work with. But yeah, working on other people's careers definitely made me like, that's when I started doing improv, is when I was doing that, because it made me sort of think like, well, what do I want to be doing? Like, don't I want, this is very capitalistic of me, but like, don't I want to have people working for me?
Sure.
Not everybody wants that. I don't know if I want that. I don't know what I want. I'm just looking at the headlights, whatever the headlights are showing.
Well, I mean,
that's
pretty much the phrase you, like, started this interview with. So, yeah, no, that's, I mean, pretty on brand, but,
Yeah, just looking as far as my headlights will show me.
And but there's nothing wrong with that.
You're so, like, I mean, even if you, that's how you can get through, know that you're inspiring. And, like, when I first met you, I was intimidated by you because you seem like this powerhouse. Like, I'm like, man, that girl's got it all together. What is she involved in? How have I not met her? She's like so, you know, like connected to everybody, and people give you a lot of respect. I mean, I see when people talk to you or when people are working on a project with you, they're like, oh, it's a big deal because she's involved. So I think that both what you as in your inner strength bring to it and all of this amazing experience that you have really helps you not only to be a good performer yourself, but to, like, help everybody else around you, and I think it shows.
I think that's key. I think, like, the next steps for me and potentially feeling, like, even more fulfilled is, like, mentorship. Like, not that I think I'm cool enough to be a mentor necessarily, but just passing along things that I've learned producing shows to sort of the next generation of improvisers, whoever they may be. Like, I want to, in a way, like, pay it forward, Haley Joel Osment style.
Yeah.
Minus the, you know, getting stabbed part.
Did he?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Okay, well, yeah, that's kind of how it ends. But
I just remember Kevin Spacey was a burn victim.
That was a weird movie.
That was a very weird movie.
Another man just disgraced by the Me Too movement.
Oh, well, I think he disgraced himself, let's be honest.
That's true. They helped everyone know he was disgraced.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think the Me Too movement is disgracing anyone. Shining a light on other people's bad behaviors.
Disgraces.
That they need to be dealing with.
Yes.
Like, that, you know, his reaction to it was a new one that we all, like, we're like, all right, so that's going to happen in the future. Awesome. You know, like, that was one of those where everybody's like, oh.
When he said,
you still suck.
When
Get
he said
here.
He was gay,
yeah.
When he came out, which everybody knew.
Yeah.
Which had zero to do with anything that that the accusations were bringing up, you know? Like, it's like, hey, but I'm gay! You know, it's like...
That's Trump's America.
In my pocket, maybe you feel bad, or, I don't know, I've struggled. I don't know, but it's like...
It's like, as a gay man, shouldn't you stand up for the fact that all gay people are not horribly hurting young children? Because that's a thing.
Yeah.
People think that. People idiot people think that, and you just made it worse because you're a celebrity and people want to talk to you. You know what, though? Before we go down the spiral.
I was going to say,
I will never watch House of Cards, and it was on my list.
Yeah.
And I want him to know that if he's listening.
I'm going to be honest with you. I've watched everything that he's been in. I will watch the new season because it's just Robin, right?
Right.
And she deserves it.
Yeah.
She's great. She's a wonderful thing. Also, the writers are lovely. You know,
maybe,
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know
maybe I'll pick up in this season of House of Cards.
Yeah, just the last one.
Yeah, I'm sure that I don't need any context from the first however many.
I don't know. Robin Wright is amazing throughout. Like, in,
she is amazing.
Completely separated. I mean, like, she's his wife in the show, but, like, what she does in her performance is just as singularly excellent as what anybody, what Kevin Spacey would or would have not done.
That's true. She is,
like,
very wonderful.
She is very much his, like, she is toe-to-toe with him the entire time, if not more so.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those, like, I was like, holy shit, this is, I remember, like, two seasons in just being like, this is Princess Buttercup, or whatever.
Yeah, right?
I was like, what in the shit is this?
And she was in Forrest Gump, don't forget.
Oh, Jenny. Yeah,
Jenny.
I know, but I hate Jenny as a character, so.
That's true.
I have no love for Jenny.
Do you ever look back at, like, 2001, I think, is when Pay It Forward came out, sometime around then, and look at how old Kevin Spacey was then, and look at how old he is now. He hasn't gotten that much older. Like, he was old then.
Well,
I digress.
No, no,
well,
that's, I mean,
like,
that's why him saying
he was
gay
he
was
in
like.
His, like, 40s, and now he's in his 60s? Like,
well,
he kind of generically age from one to the next. Also, I believe they aged him in that, because they, like, aged Helen Hunt.
Yeah,
was that Helen Hunt?
It was.
Yes.
Oh, where is she?
Where is she?
I don't know, but I love Helen Hunt. I think she's great.
Yeah, no, she was great. And I think the last thing I saw her in was As Good As It Gets.
Castaway.
Oh, yeah.
Castaway?
Oh, yeah, but what, 30
but
seconds?
But she's not,
that's
yeah.
true.
She's like, I hope you don't
she shows
leave.
Up. She shows up to, you know,
she
ruin
did a good job.
Tom Hanks's day.
Dude,
which,
that movie, yeah. Castaway, could just be, like, an example of, like, women and men in movies. She's in it for 30 seconds. He's in it for an hour and 45 minutes. Yep, makes sense.
It is, exactly. I will say, though, man, I love the idea of, like, you were saying solo shows earlier. Just, like, someone being able to carry a performance by themselves. I don't think I'll ever do that. But I respect the people that do, and I love that more women are doing more
shows. I was
going to say,
since I've been here, that has definitely been, I've definitely
a thing.
Seen more, like, solo lady shows come through. Like,
yeah.
I've seen one or two, you know, guys pop up, and they're great. You know, like, Jeff Whittaker was great when he rolled through. But I just, like, I noticed that I was just like, holy crap, I need to, like, I don't know, I need to step it up because the ladies are, like, shining.
But
like,
I love it.
Through with the solo thing.
When you're in a scene, just, like, with your improv troupe, and, like, somehow one person's on stage, and they just have to figure it out. I love watching those moments where it makes or breaks you. And the audience is like, is someone going to come out? Is someone going to come out? But, like, the people that can just take that and, like, go with it,
mm-hmm.
man, that's one of those, like, really gratifying moments. I'm not one of those people. But I love watching
you could
people
be
that
one
can
of
do
those
it.
People,
I mean, for, like, a short period of time. But I'd be up there and I'd say something mean about someone. I don't know.
You're crazy.
Yeah,
well, thank you so much for sitting down with us and chatting. It was really wonderful for you to share with us all of the great details of your career thus far. And we hope that everything that you've said can empower other women to get out there and make comedy or whatever they want to make.
Yeah.
Horror films, maybe action films you'd like to see. Make them, ladies. And and then see, you know, what's up with you in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope people are not intimidated by me.
I mean, you're a really well-traveled 16-year-old, so
thank
I mean,
you.
To the extent of, like,
still available for prom, if anyone
no,
oh my God.
Is looking. Still available, getting my dress altered right now at Ace Taylor's. I think, you know, I'm out here just wanting to collaborate with people, and thanks for giving me a chance to be on the potty.
Yeah,
do you
so
call
that
it?
Hey.
Do you call it the potty?
We're gonna call it the potty now.
We're gonna call it the potty.
Hashtag potty.
which works for me because I still call the potty, so just to bother adults around me. So,
like, I gotta go to the potty
go,
now?
Yeah, I gotta go make piddles in the potty, you know, like, just to make everybody cringe for a second. Because I'm gonna do the grown-up man version of whatever I said, so yeah.
Do you ever call your listeners, like, directly into the...
Yeah.
Do you ever... Listeners, thank you for joining us.
Well, not like that. Okay. We usually are apologizing to them for things.
I mean,
or saying things like, remember when we talked about it? We're going to talk about it again. Okay.
Sometimes we do episodes that are just easy listening jazz, and then, yeah, that's how we open up normally.
Gotcha.
When we had Nathan on, we talked directly to listeners in, where was it, Sweden?
Yeah, I think so. It's like Sweden or like, it was like Scandinavian country.
Scandinavian,
and
yeah. We were just like, hope you're enjoying it, Sweden. I don't know why.
They're probably listening. They probably picked it up, or at least China did.
Yeah.
It's funny, on the website that we have, it's a WordPress site, and there's a section on there where you can actually see. I know, people don't love it. It's easy enough for me. But there's a section that we have that shows us what countries listen.
Really?
Yeah.
And
so, like, we can
Sweden?
See. I don't know that we have a lot of them, Sweden.
Okay, well, that's all right. Well, but, you know, maybe this time.
Yeah. Thanks, Sweden.
Also, before we wrap up, I want to formally apologize to the state of Florida. Beck Bennett.
You know,
anyone who I offended with the John Lasseter thing. Anyone who I offended with the Kevin Spacey thing. I don't apologize to that guy I was talking about that we all know who I'm talking about.
We don't apologize.
No.
No.
But I think, like, overall, I wasn't too mean here, so I'm like...
No, you're very nice. You're very sweet.
Yeah, no, and believe me, I'm pretty sure the state of Florida has a lot on its plate already. It's probably... This is probably going to fly right back, you know.
Ooh, the state of California and New York City for saying both of you were going to fall off into the ocean, and New Orleans. I did say that about New Orleans as
even
well.
Even though it's true, do you have to apologize, even though it's not... You didn't invent water or weather?
They constructed their cities in spite of every reason not to, so...
I didn't know, you know? I want to apologize to Kansas for whatever that thing was we said about Kansas earlier.
Oh, boy. Because
we're going to sell it to China.
Yep. We should apologize to Kansas and every state west of that.
We should also apologize to China. We really appreciate all the money you've given.
Please don't get into a trade war.
I want to apologize to Kansas for refusing to commit to memory that anybody spoke about Kansas in the past, like, hour in my head. Like, if you said Kansas... I will stop listening to you. I will actively shut my ears down because nothing is going to be interesting like after that. So yeah, sorry Kansas that, you know, you've never occupied a thought for 1 second in my entire life.
I feel like this is the funniest ending of a podcast we've ever had where we're apologizing
to burning bridges.
People.
I apologize to
bridges for burning them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to apologize to all the men I've made uncomfortable.
No, you don't.
On stage. by constantly starting scenes where they're my husbands or my sons and, you know, where I'm making them go to work while I do housework. So I just want to apologize to all of the men that I've made really uncomfortable in my improv. And to Amy's cat, because as soon as I walked in, I was like, ugh, I'm allergic to cats, and I don't think that cat forgave me.
Oh, he's fine. He's got his own world going on. He's all right. He did respect your space, I feel
he
like.
He did.
He came over and snuggled with us.
Sat with you guys.
But he did not. He was like, I get it. It's fine.
He won't look at me, though.
Well, right now, he's checking out outside. He's protecting me. He's my Secret Service.
Mm.
He actually goes with me wherever I walk around the house.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I go to the bathroom, he sits right outside the door.
Oh, that sounds so nice. I could use that in New York. Did a lot of growing up.
Yeah, I got his concealed weapons permit and everything. It's great.
Yeah, he's carrying right now. You can't tell under the fur.
But he's not pro-NRA.
No, he thinks whoever wants to buy guns, it shouldn't be organized.
Yeah.
No, common sense gun control.
They put him through the ringer, you know, when he was getting qualified for that AR-15 that he's packing right now.
Man, I mean, his claw prints are on every national agency. I'll tell you what.
He's licking his butt.
On that note, good night, everyone.
Michelle, marry me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Yes But Why podcast.